Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Greetings and welcome to another Wednesday evening, everybody. Another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. This is episode number 179, and I am your host, Beam Weeks, and this week, the studio is actually working, so welcome aboard to my co-host here, Stephen Gies. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing all right. Got my long johns on. It's going to get down to 30 degrees in North Alabama tonight, and we don't know how to act down here, but it's good to be back live again. We were all dressed up, ready to go, had a tap in the beer keg, and, it didn't happen. So what's that doing to our calendar now, Beam?
That's going to push that year-end episode. We're still going to do it because we have a lot of cool things to talk about and to share with our listening audience. That's going to be moved to January 31st, and it will be episode number 183 by that time. But it'll be the end of January, and we'll do the year end, and maybe we'll talk about the end of the first month of the new year too. So, keep your eyes and ears open for that one. Last week it was just a situation where for like 3 or 4 days going into it, I kept getting this message that they were having issues with their live broadcast at Blog Talk Radio, but that their engineers were on it. And come showtime last week, the engineers still hadn't figured anything out. So when we went in here to do the show at showtime, there was nothing. It was just you click on buttons and nothing happened. And as some of you listeners were trying to call in, you couldn't get anything. So hopefully that's a thing in the past. And we're here tonight, so let's get the show going.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I'm down here in Alabama where my team, where my degrees are from, University of Michigan, had to play University of Alabama as part of the college playoff championship series this week. The last couple of weeks, I've been wearing Michigan T-shirts all over Alabama, and everybody's always been, oh, hey, nice, go blue, all that kind of stuff. And then Alabama got beat by Michigan a couple of days ago, and today I was in Huntsville all day wearing a Michigan T-shirt. Everybody just kept looking away. Nobody would say a word to me, so... Apparently, I don't want to fall down and get hurt because I might have to stay on the ground for a while down in here.
Yeah, but it'll be you've fallen and you can't get up, and they'll be saying, good.
Yeah.
All right.
So let's get some participation going tonight. How do they do that, Beam?
You call in. You can throw some stuff out on Twitter, and this is how you go and do that.
Call 516-453-9902 right now and join us on air or tweet us with the hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body and we'll read your comment or question live. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group.
All right. Yeah, now, you know what? We published another book this week. I thought we were going to slow down when we got to Christmas season, but it hasn't happened and we've got a bunch coming up this month as well. So, Carlisle Toms, whose book The Calling Dream we published this past year, has a sequel to that book now called Edge of Smoke, and it is out in pre-sale right now for a January 19th release. So Edge of Smoke, and we've got an audio commercial for that we'll hear tonight. Other than that, we're still working on the video, but Edge of Smoke by Carlisle Toms. Order your copy now.
All right, yeah, and we also have another book. We have from Gwen M. Plano, The Soul Whisperer's Decision. That is in pre-sale as well, and that will be available on January 15th. So get in line, get your book ready, get your order in there, and enjoy The Soul Whisperer's Decision in pre-sale now for January 15th. And if you want to know about more other books, stuff that's going on with this this podcast, and anything in the Fresh Ink world and anything in the indie publishing world, we've got a newsletter. You can get over here and get signed up for it, and here's how you can do that.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
All right. It's official.
All right. So your turn, Bean. What have we got out now?
What have we got out now? We have The Essence of Spiritual Awakening, Enlightenment, Inspiration, and Insights that Illuminate the Path to Divinely Guided Wisdom. That's by Judy White Arts. We have The Chair, Volume 4, Punt, Pass, and Kick. This is part of the Chair series by Robert McKenzie. Volume 4 is out, and I got it on good authority that he's hard at work finishing up 5, and that's going to be out before too long, Volume 5. American Darkness by Stephen Skibicki. He is a talented poet. This guy writes some incredible dark poetry and that delves into the psyche of the human mind, and it's some really cool stuff, and there's some short stories in there too. That is out now.
We'll be talking to him next week on the podcast too.
Yes, we will. He will be sitting in that seat right over there. Ran, A Civilization in Hiding, The Third Orc Chronicle by tonight's guest, Robert G. Willescroft. And that is out now. And coming soon, The King's Ransom, Tales and Legends, audiobook. And just this evening before showtime, we got the rereads from Ethan Drew, the young actor who is the voiceover artist on this one. And I hope to get that up and ready sometime by the end of this week. So keep your eyes and ears peeled on that newsletter, because we will be promoting it there and on this show. So there you go.
All right. Let's take a look at the top 25 print bestsellers. This will be the first list of 2024 Fresh Ink Group print bestsellers. And boy, I can see the whole list in one glance here. I hope Jerry Pate's listening tonight. Starting at number 25 by Janelle Jordan, Still Not Enough, Minority Millennials in the Workforce. That's the paperback edition. That's been steadily on this list lately, hasn't it, Bean?
Yes, it has.
That's a great look at what's going on in the modern workforce and the roles that minorities are playing, especially the young ones, the millennials. Now, next one, How to Teach Driving Behind the Wheel, Lesson by Lesson, Instructor's Edition by Kenneth Lindquist. And again, that's the hardcover. On both of his books, both the Instructor's Edition and the Parents Edition, it's the hardcovers that are outselling the soft covers. So parents are buying this book, the Parents Edition, and thinking, well, we got a couple more kids coming along here, we'll just keep using this book. And instructors are probably using it for reference, because if you want to get certified in your state, you got to know all this stuff. Now, the next one, A.K. Winglers, How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Georgia. That's not the only food truck business on the list this week either. So she's got 3 books now, Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee, and Georgia's made the list. The next one, and this one's always fun to see, The Rise and Fall of a Construction Giant, The History, People, and Stories of CFW Construction by Dick Bearer, Jr. That's the little story about the big company started in Fayetteville, Tennessee, that wound up to have scandals and plane crash killing executives and just all kinds of cool stories behind it. And ultimately, the company went out of business. So there's an empty building up there in Fayetteville that you can drive by to this day. Here's the story behind that building. We published this book in 2016, and it's still making our bestseller print list.
The next, little book that could.
I'm telling you, Mary Schmidt's Sammy, Hero at Age 5. This is from the point of view of her son, who succumbed to pediatric brain cancer at the age of 5. She tells his story, what it was like growing up, being part of the family, and then having to deal with the hospital and the surgeries and the treatments and stuff. And in many ways, it's a heartbreaking book, but it's also very, very reaffirming. Next, Kanoi K, My 3 Wishes, Memoir of a Hawaiian Dancer Whose Family Troupe Traveled the World. That's a fun little book. It's good to see it popping back onto the list again. Larry Landgraf, The Adventures of Ollie Orangutan. That's the paperback edition. That's a illustrated chapter book for children about an orangutan who's captured and being shipped to a zoo, but he escapes and goes on some wild adventures. Now we've got one by a scoundrel named Robert G. Willescroft, who happens to be tonight's guest, Operation Icebreaker, a Mac McDowell mission. That's one of the four Mac McDowell missions that's out right now, and he's working on number 5. Those are submarine Cold War thrillers, and they are proving very popular. Robert McKenzie's The Chair, Volume 4, Punt, Pass, and Kick is next up on the list. That's the latest in his edition. And you're right, Beam, number 5 is almost ready to go. So we'll be putting that out fairly soon. Dr. Helen Burrell's American Agony, The Opioid War Against Patients in Pain. And then above that, another Robert G. Willis Cross, the new release, RAN, A Civilization in Hiding, The Third Ort Chronicle. And that's the paperback edition. Climbing up that list like a rocket. Now, Aisha Ehsan, she's our Pakistani national who's living in the United Arab Emirates, one of the earliest books from Fresh Ink Group. I think this is about 2011, something like that. We published this, and look at this. It's back on the list again. Aisha Ehsan's The Autumn Tree. Hello, Chattanooga, famous people who have visited the Tennessee Valley. Who's that by, Beam?
That is by David Carroll.
What's that about?
NBC anchor in Chattanooga. That one is about all the famous people that came through Chattanooga over the last century or so and what they did there, musicians, actors, sports people. Muhammad Ali went through there, and just a lot of cool pictures, a lot of cool newspaper articles, firsthand witnesses talking about what it was like to go down there and see Al Jolson sing at the local theater. So, I mean, it's some really cool stuff. If you're into history, especially entertainment history, this is a book you want to get.
Yeah, and speaking of history, our next one is a novel, but it's historically based in some very, very real events. Also by tonight's guest, Robert G. Willis Croft, Operation Ivy Bells, a Mac McDowell mission. That's the first of the 4 Mac McDowell missions, soon to be 5. And that's the one that kicks off the whole series. If you're not familiar with the Mac McDowell mission, Ivy Bells, Operation Ivy Bells is a good place to start. That's the paperback edition. Now, we're going to the hardcover edition of The Essence of Spiritual Awakening, Enlightenment, Inspiration, and Insights that Illuminate the Path to Divinely Guided Wisdom by Judy White Arts. That book's only been out for, 5 or 6 weeks, something like that? And it's still climbing the list and doing very well here. Now, here's an old stalwart. This is by Country Music Hall of Fame drummer Mark Herndon. His memoir, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip, paperback edition, always on this list. And if I look 3 slots above it, there's the hardcover edition as well. Now, between them, we've got Sassy Discovers the AME Church by B.A. Johnson. That's the first of 2 books in her illustrated chapter book series for children about the AME Church. Sassy Discovers the AME Church. And now above that, speaking of college football, Celebrate 98, the untold stories behind the Tennessee Football Vols 1998 National Championship. And that's by Off the Hook sports writer Dave Hooker. Boy, it's easy to say off the hook, isn't it? Celebrate 98. Watch for that. Now, I've already mentioned Mark Herndon's book. Above that, it's the hardcover edition of The Chair, Volume 4, Punt, Pass, and Kick by Robert McKenzie. So there's another example of the hardcover outselling the softcover in a novel, even though this novel is like 600 pages. I mean, this thing is long and it's fairly expensive, but people are wanting the hardcover edition. Now, we've got in the number 5 slot, A.K. Wingler's How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Florida. Print copies of this book have been selling like crazy the last week or two. You know what happened, Beam? A whole bunch of people got food trucks for Christmas, and now they're trying to figure out how to run them.
How to run them, yep.
Yep. All right, so number 4 above that. Gwen M. Plano, The Soul Whisperer's Decision. This one is so new. It's only been out, about a week or so. It's actually going to be released January 15th, so it's in pre-sale now. Get out there and order your copies. We're going to hear the audio commercial tonight. I think we are.
No, we're not. We don't have one of those yet.
Okay. Hopefully by next week we'll have that one finished, and I've already started working on some animations, so the video shouldn't be too far behind it. Now that brings us to our top 3. Celebrate 98, The Untold Stories Behind the Tennessee Football Vols 1998 National Championship by Dave Hooker, hardcover edition. People are buying the hardcover of that because they are true Tennessee football fans or just college football fans in general, and they want to have a nice copy on the show. It's not too late, people, and there's always next year, too. That's a phrase you hear in college football a lot. Celebrate 98. Get your copy. That brings us to our top 2. Now, our top slot for the past week or so has been David Carroll's I Won't Be Your Scapegoat, David Carroll's Homemade Social Media Blunders, paperback edition. But that has dropped to number two now because just in the past few hours, jumping into the number one slot, selling one more copy than I Won't Be Your Scapegoat is Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks and Keeping the Fleet Afloat by retired U.S. Navy Lieutenant Commander Jerry Pate. And that's with an assist from tonight's guest, Robert G. Willis-Croft, who helped Jerry put that together and was the impetus to get him to sit down and write this thing down in the first place. So congratulations to everybody, and congratulations again, Lieutenant Commander Pate, Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks and Keeping the Fleet Afloat is our number one print bestseller from Fresh Ink Group this week.
All right. So if you missed that countdown, you can replay this episode. How can you do that? We've got an archive, and you want to find the different episodes in the archive? Here's how you do that.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indy archives on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenGees.com, BeamWeeks.com, FreshInkGroup.com, and on Spotify. And now, you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. Just search The Voice of Indy, all one word.
All right.
So let's meet tonight's guest. Dr. Robert G. Willis-Croft is a retired submarine officer, deep sea and saturation diver, scientist, author, and a lifelong adventurer. He spent 22 months underwater, a year in the equatorial Pacific, 3 years in the Arctic ice pack, and a year at the geographic South Pole. Boy, that sounds like a guy you can't get him off the couch, huh? He holds degrees in marine physics and meteorology and a doctorate for developing a system to protect scuba divers in contaminated water. A prolific author of both nonfiction, Cold War thrillers, and hard science fiction. Now, both didn't work with that, did it? Both nonfiction, Cold War thrillers, and hard science fiction. He lives in Centennial, Colorado. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Welcome, Robert.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
All right.
All right. So how are you doing these days, Robert?
Well, considering that I'm recovering from an operation where the doctor went in and relieved two nerves coming out of the vertebrae in my neck, I guess I'm doing pretty well.
So what was the deal behind that? If you want to talk a little bit about that.
I wish I could give you a really exciting reason why it happened, but the doc told me it was just arthritis and age.
Okay. Fair enough.
So, you just look forward to it. You know, all of you guys listening, you're going to get there sooner or later.
I just raised my hand. And it hurt raising it. All right, so, you know, Robert, we've had you on the show a number of times before, and we've asked a lot of the same questions as we have in the past. This time, why don't we start out with, tell us a little bit more about your career, some of the highlights, things that you've done, because we hit a couple of things here. You've obviously been around the Equatorial Pacific, 3 years in the Arctic ice pack. What were you doing in some of these places? What was going on?
Well, in the Equatorial Pacific, I was researching the feasibility of mining manganese nodules from the ocean bottom. And the way we would do that is to drop what's called a box core, sort of a meter square device that would drop fairly rapidly into the ocean bottom, and then a plate would slide and close off the bottom, and then we would bring it up and we'd get an image, and we'd actually get a piece of the bottom, a square meter, and we could count the number of manganese nodules that were anything from the size of a marble all the way up to bigger than a softball. And the idea was to see whether or not a ship could go out there and suck these up using vacuum and process them for the manganese and the other minerals that were in these balls, and if it could be done profitably.
Okay.
Well, what about the contaminated water thing that you did your doctorate on? What was that about? Was that a naval kind of a thing, or?
Well, that was part of my activities with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. We were charged with Well, a little bit of background here. New York City has an awful lot of sewage. The sewage is processed in several sewage plants, and what you end up with are barge loads of sewage sludge. And they ride these barges out into the New York Bight, several miles off the coastline, and then they open the bottom and dump the sludge onto the ocean bottom. And then another barge comes along and empties a sand cap over the sludge. And what we needed to know was whether or not the sand cap was doing the job that it was supposed to do, which is to keep this nasty stuff undercover so that it didn't get out in the water. And in order to test it, we didn't want to just dive down there and check it out because the water had all kinds of stuff in it, as you can imagine. And so we set about developing a system for protecting scuba divers. Of course, any research project ends up going down rabbit holes that you would never anticipate. I recall one event, we were sitting around a table talking about dry suits because it seemed that dry suits were the obvious way to go, at least in principle. And somebody raised the question about dry suits and about how you actually control your buoyancy so that you can stay at a particular depth in the water. And people around the table said things like, well, we've always done it. Everybody knows how to do that. There's no special requirements. And I said, really? Why don't we test it out? Well, we had this tower that was 100 feet tall, filled with water, and it had glass ports where we could put TV cameras and film what was happening. And what we did was test various dry suits to see whether they performed in emergency circumstances the way everybody thought they would. Well, they didn't. Not at all. And we ended up developing methods for recovering from serious situations. For example, if you're down at 100 feet, the suit seals at your wrists. It has booties attached. It seals at the neck, and there's air in the suit. Now, if you are upside down, as you often are, with your feet above you because you're examining something on the sea floor, and if you accidentally put a little bit of extra air in the suit, it rises up to your legs, and you immediately start rising to the surface. And as you rise, the air expands, and pretty soon the suit around your legs are like two big balloons, and you come shooting out of the water like a rocket. And it is the real possibility of experiencing an embolism. And it turns out it's very easy to prevent that from happening, but nobody knew how, and we developed that along with other things. Just an example of what was going on.
And that was your doctoral dissertation, huh?
And that I ended up getting a doctorate out of it. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's definitely cool. No doubt. All right. So, Beam, what's happening over on Twitter.
Yeah, we have a couple of comments here. So over on Twitter, we've got Dr. Helen Burrell. She says, congratulations, Dr. Willis Croft. Do tell us, creatives, about your current book and about your writing process. I'm listening.
Yeah, we'll definitely be getting to those two questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, I will, Helen, you can hear my answer right now. Just I will gladly discuss those in depth. I look forward to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Verwayne Greenhall, good to have him back this week. He says it's cold and raining hard here in the armpit of Florida, locally known as Big Bend area. We are heading down to 31 tonight here in northern Florida. Well, we were at about 32 all day. So you guys down there complaining about, oh, it's getting cold. It's going to be 31. We're going to be in the 20s or teens tonight.
Yeah, but you're supposed to be, not them.
Yeah. Actually, we're supposed to be colder than that by this time. Anyway, he says, we are heading down to 31 tonight in northern Florida. Good to see everyone. Yes, good to have you back here too, Verwayne. We are going
hey,
to...
Verwayne, this is Robert. Just a comment. When I was at the South Pole, we experienced 117.8 degrees below zero.
Wow.
That's cold. Now, wow. Verwaine, he's used to cold weather because he comes from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where, you know, I don't think it was 117 below zero, but it would get cold. He was up there on the shores of Lake Superior, which gets real cold. I mean, that's, you know, 20, 30 below zero.
That's where you freeze in the winter and the black flies eat you
flies
alive
eat
in the
you
summer.
Up in the summer.
Yeah.
Okay, we are talking with author Robert G. Willis-Croft. We have some callers. We're going to go to a commercial first, and when we get back, we're going to go to the phone lines and see who's got what to say.
In the Pruitt-Igoe slums of St. Louis in the 1960s, a heroin addict mother breaks her son's dolls and screams, "You are not a girl." However, no one can convince Stephanie to live as Stephen. Her mother pimps her out to a man who rapes and takes pictures of her. After finding her mother brutally murdered, she is placed in Christian foster care, where they also try to convince her to accept being male. Her mother's lover is sentenced to life in prison for the murder. Author of widely praised The Calling Dream, Carlisle Toms brings back famed televangelist Pastor Ronald Dennison in this unflinching sequel, Edge of Smoke. Dennison sets up a trust that allows a compassionate old neighbor to adopt Stephanie out of foster care. Still, she is violently bullied at school for identifying as female. The trust pays for transition surgery at 18, and she begins to live fully as a woman. Frightened by men, she remains a virgin until she falls in love with Jordan. But she runs into the man who abused her and remembers her childhood pledge to kill him. Will her lust for murdering the man who brutalized her as a child cause her to lose the man she loves? Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, The Calling Dream, and now, Edge of Smoke, can be found anywhere and shipped everywhere in jacketed hardcover and softcover editions, or downloaded in all ebook formats. Edge of Smoke by Carlisle Toms.
All right. Now, normally we play these commercials and we send you over to YouTube so that you can watch the video that goes with them, but we just put this book up a couple of days ago and we're still working on the video part. So by next week's show, that should be over there. But I want to remind everybody, all of these commercials, after the show, head over to YouTube and check them out, because there are some very cool videos over there, and it helps reinforce what these books are and helps you remember the titles and the author's name, which is what this is all about.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got a couple of callers here. This first one is area code 757, and I believe that's Virginia, so we'll go to that one first. Hello, Virginia.
Hello.
You're on the air. Hi. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Hi, Virginia Beach.
What's your name?
I'm John Roseman. I've been on your show.
Hello, John.
Hi, John.
Yeah. Good to have you back.
I'm a friend of the esteemed author. You're entertaining and hosting tonight.
All right.
I have a deep literary question to ask, but a minor one. There's a minor one occurred to me. One of you called him a scoundrel. Now, I'm a friend of Robert, and I've long suspected he was a scoundrel. I'm just interested in what kind of scoundrel he is. Is he difficult to work with, as many writers are, or in some other way? Please advise.
That's the affectionate version of scoundrel. But if we're going to leave our guest sitting there on hold for a minute while I answer the question, actually, Robert's, we call him persnickety. He's a perfectionist like we are.
I thought
and
so.
Everything has to be just right, and if that means going back and working on it one more time to get it there, that's the way we like to do things at Fresh Ink Group.
Well,
so he's one of our favorite writers. He's a great storyteller, but like I say, he's a perfectionist, and that's the way we ought to be.
Sure. The question I really wanted to ask is that if you begin one of Robert's novels, you usually find there's a list of characters, a rather long list of characters. And I just wondered, what comes first, the chicken or the egg, the story or the list of characters that Robert organizes and assembles in his mind before writing the story proper? I was just wondering about the relationship of the characters, the list of characters, to the story itself. Can he enlighten
me? Well, let me see if I can
that.
Answer that for you. I outline my stories. I use an Excel spreadsheet. I use a column per chapter, and then the lines within the columns are various subsections of the chapters, and I keep track of the story arc. And as I introduce characters, I keep track of them and create a bio, much of which may never appear in the story, but you know, I know what kind of peanut butter the character likes, if the character likes peanut butter. And it's not so much that I create the characters and write a story around them as that they evolve together as I write the outline.
Okay.
Does that help?
It does help. One thing you've indicated is that you are a plotter. You know, I'm a pantser as a writer. You are a plotter, and I think I knew that before, but thanks for filling me in on it.
Now, one big advantage to being an outliner like you are, Robert, obviously, is you can think way ahead and think of big story arcs, like your entire Orc Chronicles series or your Mac McDowell series, where, you know, you're setting up parts of stories that are actually going to play out in subsequent novels. That's hard to do if you're a pantser. I mean, how far ahead do you think on these stories, Robert?
Well, that's a good question. As you know, I have, because we were just talking about it this afternoon, there is a book coming out. It's a future book that actually ties together the Starchild saga and the Orc Chronicles, where it brings both story arcs together into one book, where that book will have alternating chapters with each of the character sets, and then toward the last third of the book, they will merge together and move forward as one unit. I didn't see that coming, but
wow.
I was doing some research. I'm really interested in astrophysics, and the cosmic microwave background, for which a Nobel Prize was given about a decade ago for the discovery of it, has a cold spot. It's an area that is significantly cooler than the rest of the CMB, and it is large, and there doesn't seem to be anything there. And I've been fascinated by this and following the research, and the most recent research says that most likely this cold spot is the intersection of two parallel universes, ours and another one. And so I thought, whoa, this is amazing. I can set up so that my characters in the Orc Chronicles are in our current universe, and my characters in the Starchild saga are in a parallel universe that is mostly like ours, but with some very tiny differences that matter if you dig deeply enough. And so that's where this is going.
Wow.
All right.
So thanks for calling, John. And
yeah.
Look forward to having you back on the show next time your next book comes out.
Thank you. I just had a book come out, by the way.
Tell us about it real quick.
This book is called A Breath of Fresh Air, and it was the stimulus for it, the inspiration for it, was the fact that I developed a condition called sleep apnea.
Mm.
So my character has sleep apnea. His wife has left him, taking his son with him, and he has to adapt himself to using a machine, but to his surprise, the machine comes alive. And then all sorts of strange things happen with the government coming after him and him trying to escape. All kinds of strange and unusual adventures into the paranormal, and into ordinary life.
Wow.
So It's now available by pre-order. It's pretty good. It might become a series.
Yeah. I'm picturing
what's
a series of horror movies, the CPAP Chronicles.
What's the title of the book again?
Why not?
Tell us the title again, John.
A Breath of Fresh Air.
By John
a
B.
Breath
Rosenman.
Of...
Yeah, and
okay,
I'm working on a sequel called Every Breath You Take.
Yeah, okay.
Get
right
over there and get your pre-order, everybody.
Yep, thanks for calling, John.
Let me add something here. This is Robert. Some of you may not realize that John, although he's now a retired professor, was a professor of English at Norfolk State University, where he, among other things, designed and taught a course on writing and science fiction. So he knows
science
what he's
fiction,
doing.
Fantasy, and horror.
Right. Ooh. I was just going to add, and fantasy and horror, and he is the past president of the American Horror Association?
I was chairman of the board of the Horror Writers Association.
Yeah. Horror writers.
And one of the trustees was Peter Straub, just to drop a name.
Just
wow.
To drop one, yeah. That's a big one.
Fantastic.
All right.
Well, I value my friendship with John.
All right.
Good.
All right.
Likewise.
Well, thanks for calling in tonight, John. We appreciate
it's my
that.
My pleasure.
And we may be reaching out to you before too long and have you back on the show. You can talk about your new book.
Thank you.
Right.
Yeah. Now, before we take the next call, Beam's going to run two commercials here back-to-back, the Ort Federation and Starchild Trilogy, which are the two books Robert was just talking about bringing the series together. So let's hear what both of them are about.
All right.
Now, from science fiction master Robert G. Williscroft, The Ort Federation, to the stars, the second Ort Chronicle. As the Ort Federation becomes a major force in the solar system, Braxton Thorpe passes the Federation chairmanship to former U.S. President John Butler. Thorpe's group offers humanity virtual immortality, but Isidore Orlov and his Udakhni Enterprises oppose their every move. While Thorpe's group terraforms Mars for more living space, the Mars Reds prove formidable as resistors. If the Asterian Starship fighter pilots are released, will they align with Phoenix or Udakhni? And who will develop the right FTL technology? In this tense space adventure, Thorpe, his team, and Max the Tabby Cat travel to Proxima Centauri and beyond to the Aster system, 84 light years distant. Will Thorpe bring together humans and Asterians in their quest for intergalactic travel? Will long life prove more than mere humans can handle? Grab Icicle, A Tensor Matrix, The First Ort Chronicle, and continue the journey with the Ort Federation to the stars. Proudly published in all print, digital, and sensory-enhanced audiobooks by Fresh Ink Group. Now, the Star Child Trilogy by Robert G. Williscroft is complete. In Book 1, Slingshot, three scientist engineers reach for the stars as they blend their skills with a host of skilled colleagues to create the world's first space launch loop. A team of young eco-terrorists will go to any length to halt the project. One woman is determined to scoop the story, reporting events to a watching world. Slingshot ranges from Seattle's financial district to the ocean bottom off Baker Island to the edge of space and across the vast panorama of an equatorial Pacific. It's a love story, a gender bender, and a mystery about a missing aviatrix, a conspiracy, and a true believer. It's about high finance, intrigue, heroism, fanaticism, betrayal, and humanity's surge into outer space.
In Book 2, The Starchild Compact, an international team ventures to Saturn's moon Iapetus to verify it really is a derelict starship. They discover the founders, descendants of the starship's builders, who arrived in our solar system 150,000 years ago. Together with the founders, the explorers advance founder science with momentous implications for the entire solar system, paving the way for a joint push to the distant reaches of the galaxy. But a Persian caliphate stowaway sabotages the mission, hoping to destroy science that he believes violates Islam. The Starchild Compact blends tomorrow's science with human foibles, fears, beliefs, and political intrigue, speculating on how civilization might develop while traveling on a generational starship, and how modern humans might interact with remnants of that civilization. In Book 3, the Iapetus Federation, besieged Israelis on Earth make their way to Mars as the Federation expands throughout the solar system. While global jihad rages on Earth, putting millions to the sword, the Starchild Institute develops wormhole transportation. But will this new technology be ready in time to rescue all that is left of the United States, the beleaguered Lone Star Conservancy, and remnants of other cultures around the globe? From hand-to-hand combat in the oceans, to battles on Earth's surface, to struggles in interplanetary space, our heroes fight to survive and expand to the far reaches of the universe. Robert G. Williscroft is an adventurer, polar explorer, deep-sea diver, nuclear submariner, scientist, and best-selling, award-winning author. His stories portray the accurate science and precise engineering that appeals to hard science fiction buffs. But the Starchild trilogy is for everyone who loves an epic tale, a grand journey by men and women who loom larger than life as they work, play, and love. Make the Starchild trilogy your own with individual hardcover, softcover, audiobook, and all major ebook editions worldwide, or collect the entire set for one epic journey by Robert G. Williscroft, the Starchild trilogy.
Now, both of those commercials will be updated soon. The first one is missing two books, and the second one is missing one book, and shortly we'll be asking Robert about those. But first, we're talking to Robert G. Williscroft, and we have another caller on the phone, right, Dean?
We do indeed. This one is coming from area code 720, so this would be Colorado. Hello, Colorado. Welcome to the show. What's your name, and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name's Bennett Rutledge, and I'm calling from Centennial, Colorado, just south of Denver, and just a few miles down the road from where Dr. Williscroft lives.
Hey, Bennett.
Well, welcome, Bennett. Do you have a question, comment?
No, actually, I have a comment. I didn't really understand the details of how Dr. Williscroft got his doctorate, and I remember when I was getting scuba training that rapidly surfacing from any serious depth is a very dangerous thing to do, and right at the top of the list is the bends. So thank you very much for doing what you've done to protect divers of all sorts. And for what you have done to change what ought to be science fiction into history.
Well,
That's
a really nice comment. Sometimes when people ask me what I do, I say that I write future history.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something Robert Heinlein was known for as well.
Yeah. And I'm about three-quarters of the way through the third volume of the Starchild series. And it's quite an exciting yarn. And I will concede that global jihad is a threat these days. And part of it is our own fault for poking the beehive. or the wasp's nest or whatever.
It's a world full of wasp nests, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting when you look at the Iapetus Federation. As I write my novels, I don't go far into the future. I go relatively nearby so that people are recognizable, scientific instruments are recognizable, cultural mores are recognizable, but anybody can look around our society today and see that things are not the way they were when we were young people.
Yeah.
And so I make the presumption, and I think I'm quite accurate, that these will continue moving in that direction. And so the mores that I portray in the Star Child saga are quite different from what we have today, but they are clearly an extension of what we have today, and that's what makes the story particularly intriguing, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is challenging to come up with cultural differences, too. Tying back to what you were saying earlier about spiritual growth, I've been exploring the implications of Psalm 82, that we as children of the Creator are heirs to the power to call worlds into being with our word. And science fiction is a textbook example of that.
Yep, it is, isn't it? And it's an interesting interpretation of that particular piece of scripture.
Hmm.
And
I've heard it a couple of times, but your bringing it forward now is the most recent, and I've only heard it two or three times in my 82 years.
Hmm.
Now, and one of the ways of thinking that I've been trying to push out into the world is something I'll call the way of the starfish. You know, human beings are bilaterally symmetrical. And we generally think in terms of on the one hand and on the other hand. And as a matter of fact, the bear trap called the fallacy of the excluded middle has been an albatross around human necks since back in the pre-Christian era, Greece. And a starfish can bring to bear several other hands. Some starfish have as many as 24 arms. And so they can hang on to a concept or a thought or a position or a the right answer in 24 different flavors, 24 different points of view.
In my book, the Operation Ivy Bells, which is the first of the Mac McDowell missions, the story starts off with an encounter at 1,000 feet, diving a form of scuba, breathing exotic gases, of course. Well, the encounter is with four Humboldt squid who have multiple appendages and were very hungry. And they communicated with each other using fluorescent colors. We've learned since then that they have a total of 26 available colors. And it was quite clear that they were stalking us and that they were coordinating their activities in order to have all of us as a meal. They didn't get us, but they sure worked hard at it.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Bennett. We appreciate your call. We hope to hear from you again in future shows.
Yeah.
And thank you all for doing what you do.
Thank you. All right. So, Robert, you've talked about the Oort a little bit and Star Child a little bit. We've heard those two commercials. We're going to go ahead and run the Daedalus Files commercial right now and then ask you about fitting all of this stuff together.
All right.
In Daedalus, Navy SEAL Derek Tiger Bailey, irreverent member of the SEAL's Winged Insertion Command, makes a harrowing first base jump in the experimental Griffin 7 hard-shell wingsuit from the edge of space. He test flies the armor-plated Griffin 10 in Daedalus LEO, catapulting into space by slingshot and dropping from a record-obliterating 160 clicks. Testing the enhanced Griffin 10 MK4 in Daedalus Squad, Bailey's six-man team believes it is fully prepared for hurtling around the world and staging critical re-entry, but challenged to innovate life-or-death solutions with only seconds to spare. It might not survive intact. Then the presidential frontrunner is seized by pirates for ransom in Daedalus combat, and the SWIC team is called to action where it must literally improvise on the fly with everything to lose. Join Tiger Bailey through all four adventures in sci-fi master Robert G. Willis-Croft's Daedalus series, now collected for the first time as the Daedalus Files, SEAL's Winged Insertion Command, SWIC.
All right.
Our guest is Robert G. Willis-Croft. There's still time to call in if someone wants to talk to Robert, 516-453-9902. And, of course, you can post a comment on Twitter, X, by putting hashtag Fresh Ink Group anywhere in the body of your tweet, and we'll see it right here on the air. So, Robert, we've now heard the commercials for the Ork Chronicles series and for the Starchild trilogy and for Daedalus. What are your plans regarding all three of these series, and why are we going to have to update these commercials?
Well, in the first place, after I wrote the three books of the Starchild trilogy, Slingshot, Starchild Compact, and Iapetus Federation, I then stumbled across a German consortium that was turning wingsuits into hard shell devices. And wingsuits are things that you see with daredevils who jump off of cliffs and material is spread between their arms and their legs and between their legs. And they sort of glide and fly until they're maybe 200 feet above the ground, and then they pop their parachutes and drop down. But the this consortium was making something called the Griffon. It's for real. And this is hard shell. It has a little rocket attached to it using a hypergolic fuel that doesn't require any igniter. You put it together and it burns. And I got to thinking, man, this is really something. What if we gave it to the SEALs, and what if they developed it into a way to drop from low Earth orbit into any kind of a combat situation? And that developed into the Daedalus Files. And that falls into the Starchild trilogy. It takes place in the Slingshot universe with some of the same players and with the this huge machine, this huge space launch loop. He literally jumps from a tower 80 kilometers above the surface of the Earth and uses the wingsuit, the Griffon wingsuit, to fly to the island of Kiribati in the North Equatorial Pacific. Anyway, that became another book in the series, and so I renamed the series the Star Child Saga, that now has four books in it. And we are in the process, you guys at Fresh Ink Group and me as the author are in the process of modifying the covers and making certain that these books appear as a full series. And then I had written Icicle, which is basically the story of a guy like Elon Musk, an excellent engineer who's got more money than he could possibly use, and he finds out that he's got terminal cancer. He can't do anything about it. He arranges to have his head frozen when he dies, and the story picks up about 100 years later in our future when he wakes up inside an electronic matrix. He's an icicle, and things kind of go from there. They get complicated, and he learns about a forthcoming alien invasion, and he's got to convince Earth nations that they better do something about it, because these guys had been here once and nearly wiped out all life on Earth, and they're about to do it again. And that that takes up the first novel. The second novel in the series, the Ort Federation, looks at how Thorpe, the engineer, manages to organize everything and get it going, and how they are able to overcome the invaders and decide to go visit the invader star system and determine that an alliance is better than conflict. And so they set up an alliance with the invaders with the purpose of exploring the universe. You've got two intelligent species, space capable, with faster than light craft, and it's a natural to work together rather than fight one another. And so they do. And the book Ran, which is the third book in the series that just came out.
Just came out.
They're on their way to investigate this cold spot in the cosmic microwave background. And their first stop is the star Ran. Ran is the Arabic name for the star. And it's a real star. And it has exoplanets. And we don't know anything about the exoplanets, but when our starship gets there, the species, reptilian species on the planet Arkan, they call it Arkan, has just started their spaceflight program, and there's two of their astronauts, intelligent lizards, are on their way in a capsule, just like our Apollo capsules, around their moon. And that's when we show up. We didn't know about their existence. We didn't know they were there because they had heard the electronic transmissions from us and from the Asterians and were scared to death of us. They figured that with our military might, we could totally overwhelm them, and so they just stayed hidden. They didn't broadcast. We didn't know they were there. So we discover them just as their capsule's going behind their moon, so their mission control loses contact with them. And we spirit the two astronauts, a male and a female, aboard our starship. And when the capsule comes back around, the Arkan Mission Control has an empty capsule. You know, that's a big deal. And they do quick, thorough investigations and conclude that the only thing that could have happened is that their astronauts were abducted by aliens. We're the aliens.
Yeah.
We see the entire story from the point of view of this Saurian race, this reptilian race. The entire story is told through their eyes. They see us, the aliens. They're terrified of us, but they figure fairly quickly that they may be smarter than us, but we got better toys than they have. And they figure out how to work with us and avoid conflict, and that becomes the story of Ran. The next book, which will be out with any luck by the end of this month or perhaps the first or second week in February, is called Keyed, A Lost Civilization. Well, when the starship Andromeda leaves Ran, they take along a contingent of Arkans with them, including the two astronauts who were originally abducted because they really like the new technology and they like what's going on. And they head towards a triple star system called Keyed. And when they get there, what they discover is something called a Dyson sphere. A Dyson sphere was first described by Freeman Dyson back in the 60s. But when a civilization reaches a point where it uses up all of the available energy that it can on its planet, it has to start using energy from the sun. And at some point, it needs to capture all of the energy from its sun, and to do so, it has to put a sphere all the way around the sun in order to capture the energy. And that has come to be called the Dyson sphere. And what they find is a Dyson sphere, but it's derelict. They find little robots that are building it, and they're scavenging other parts of the sphere for the raw materials to build the part of the sphere they're on. So you have this continuing destruction and building process that's going on. And they explore it. It's a huge thing that can hold a population of trillions, but it doesn't. And they find several primitive species inside. And that makes up the story of Keed, a lost civilization. And as I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking about the guys who have been exploring in the Star Child saga, that's when my fascination with the cosmic microwave background cold spot began to push itself into my consciousness, and I realized that what they're going to do is find each other, each from a separate universe, and they're going to interact in ways that I haven't quite figured out yet. It's not going to come out until probably the end of this year, maybe the first part of next year.
Do you have a title for that yet?
Beyond the Beyond, Penetrating the Multiverse.
All right. So that's cool. That's bringing two separate series together and then continuing forward as one series. I like that.
All right. We are talking to author Robert G. Willis-Croft. You want to do the Mac McDowell commercial?
Yeah, let's run that ad and ask about that.
All righty.
Now, from Fresh Ink Group and best-selling author Robert G. Willis-Croft, the Mac McDowell Mission Series. With a security clearance above top secret, Saturation Dive Team Officer in Charge Mac McDowell leads his team into critical Cold War counter-Soviet missions. Watch Mac prove what brave men can achieve under real pressure, the kind that will steal your air and crush the life out of you. In Operation Ivy Bells, it's the summer of 1972 when Mac and his off-the-books deepwater espionage group are conducting a daring undersea wiretapping operation to gather Russian intel and avert world war. Join nuclear submariner Mac McDowell for extreme diving, a battle with giant squid, and more as he risks everything in the most dangerous operation yet. In Operation Icebreaker, Mac McDowell is leading his submarine team for a mission to lay SOSUS arrays under the Arctic ice when they clash with a highly automated Alpha-class Soviet submarine. Overwhelmed by mechanical problems, the Soviet crew abandons their sub near Point Barrow, Alaska. The skipper launches DSRV-1 Mystic so Mac and his crew can board the empty sub and gather intelligence. The arrival of an even more advanced Soviet sub leads to breathtaking underwater clashes with the specter of war looming. Will Mac and his crew be sunk by the Soviets, or will they safely return to Alaska, where Mac's new love, Kate, anxiously waits? In Operation Arctic Sting, Mac McDowell and his team capture the abandoned Soviet sub. Piloting their prize through the ice pack to the U.S. East Coast, they must evade or confront other Soviet subs trying to recover the ship or sink it. Breathtaking deep-sea clashes erupt, including hand-to-hand combat with Soviet Morskoy Spetsnaz divers under the ice. Too far from Tuthis to escape, the Americans are accosted by a 5-ton orca. Will Mac's ship survive long enough to reach friendly waters, or will the men become just another meal for a deadly whale? In Operation Whiteout, Mac McDowell's Tuthis tangles with Argentine subs in the South Atlantic, then confronts a Chi-Com sub off Thurston Island. Escorting a Taiwanese sub, Tuthis is attacked by a Chinese Han-class sub and a North Korean AIP sub. Will Mac complete his mission, or will he meet his watery grave on the Pacific's abyssal plain? The McDowell Mission Series by Robert G. Willis-Croft is available worldwide in jacketed hardcovers, paperbacks, ebooks from Kindle to Nook and Kobo and more, plus exclusive audiobook editions with music and sound effect. The Mac McDowell Mission Series is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Take a breath and dive in for thrilling submarine adventures in every Mac McDowell mission.
All right. So, Robert, Mac McDowell, what's next for that series? Number five?
Yeah, let me start off by saying that the first book, Operation Ivy Bells, was semi-autobiographical in that I took experiences that I was directly involved with and enhanced them somewhat and changed them somewhat so that I could actually tell the story, because even today a lot of that is classified and can't be told. And then in the subsequent books, I carried the theme forward. The stories are real. The events happened, mostly. And the as a reader who was present at some of these events, you would be hard-pressed to determine in the story where reality ceases and fiction starts. I blend them very carefully. Now, in the fifth book, it's called Vela Redux. Back in 1979, there was an incident off of South Africa picked up by our Hotel Vela satellites. It was two flashes that are characteristic of an atmospheric nuclear explosion. We kept it under wraps because it became apparent that this was probably, and this is real stuff, this isn't my imagination, this was probably a joint operation with the Israelis and the South African apartheid government at the time. It turned out the South Africans had a lot of uranium and the Israelis had a lot of expertise. And between them, they took the uranium and the expertise and they built some bombs and they had to test it out. And apparently that's what they did. Well, Operation Vela Redux, the U.S. Secretary of State receives a visit from the Israeli Minister of International Affairs, their Secretary of State, explaining that things are going on in South Africa that has the Israelis greatly concerned. And as a result, Mack, who is now the commanding officer of the submarine, is assigned the task of taking an Israeli special operations team down into South African waters to investigate the bombs that de Klerk, who was the last president of apartheid South Africa and the first president of the integrated South Africa, and to investigate the four bombs that he historically had made, a fifth one that he claimed was in the process of being built, and a sixth one that nobody knew about, a smaller one, a backpack bomb. Hmm. And that's what this story is about. History is intertwined with the fictional characters in such a way that you can't tell them apart, and it's going to be just a gangbuster, cracking good story.
Well, sounds great. Any predictions on when that one will come out?
June, July.
Okay. All right. That gives people time to read the first four books in the series and be ready for it when it comes out around midsummer or so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I thought that you guys might enjoy something. In Operation Whiteout, I have a disclaimer that is attributed to the diary of Test Operations Group team member, Petty Officer First Class Lodek Slowski. Everybody calls him Ski, of course.
Yeah.
Following the successful completion of Operation Whiteout. And I'd like to, it's just a couple paragraphs. I'd just like to read this so that you and the audience out there can get a sense of how this stuff works, okay?
Okay.
Yes, on the sub I was on, we did do some of the stuff we did, and we didn't do some of the other stuff we did because if we did do it, it was so secret, so we didn't really do it, even though we did, but not really. Those medals me and my shipmates got that we didn't get for doing what we didn't do that we did, I really got those, except not. But yeah, that's because we never went where we were, so we weren't there where we were. And even though we weren't where we were, we did do the stuff we didn't do while we weren't there not doing it. As for that boat we were on when we didn't go there on it and didn't do the stuff we did while not doing that either, apparently, I'm not supposed to even mention the USS Toothist because I guess I'm not allowed to refer to the Toothist for security reasons, so I won't do that. Mention the USS Toothist, I mean. The other stuff, it's okay for me not to mention that too. So the bottom line is that while we weren't on the USS Toothist, which I'm not going to mention, not doing what we were doing where we weren't, we didn't do that either. I hope this clarifies things for you.
Perfectly. Historical fiction, or is it? All right, we're talking to Robert G. Willis Croft. Robert, one of the things we put in our newsletters each week is, or most weeks anyway, is what kind of upcoming events you're making appearances at. Now, we're always trying to urge our authors to get more involved in scheduling events, getting out there, meeting the fans, and trying to sell a few books here and there, and you seem to be pretty good at that. What's your strategy? What kind of events do you plan? How do you plan them, and what do you learn from doing these?
Well, I'm constantly scouring the internet for shows that are being put on that somehow relate to what I think I do, which is adventure and science fiction. So in Colorado Springs, which is just a few miles south, there's something called Cosine Con. It's a three-day event on the 19th and the 20th and the 21st of January. I will have a booth set up with a special banner along the front of the table and up above the table displaying the fascinating world of Robert G. Willis Croft and showing pictures of the books and pictures of the orca and divers in the water and spaceships in space and a black hole and the Dyson sphere, things like that. And then I display my books and I sell books, and then I participate in panels where we talk about various subjects and just generally have a good time. In the case of Cosine Con, is science fiction fans and authors having fun together. On the weekend of July the 4th, I expect to be at the Fan Expo, which is the replacement for Comic-Con. That's an event. There will be a couple of 100,000 people walking the aisles. It's a huge event. And I haven't received an official invitation yet, but I have received assurance under the table that invitation is forthcoming.
Oh, cool. Well, what about materials? You mentioned showing pictures. Do you print up posters? Do you have giveaways? Do you do bookmarks? What kind of stuff do you work with?
I've created something called a rack card. They're typically used for in motels and other places like that. They'll have a wire rack, and these cards are about 6 inches tall by 3 inches wide, and they've got a front and a back, and they normally depict restaurants and places of entertainment, but mine show images of my series, and then on the back, a summary of the books in the series and a QR code where you can get to my website and buy the books. And I have those for each of my series and for a couple of other books that I have that aren't part of series. And I hand them out freely. I have a special business card my business card didn't have enough real estate for all my books. So I created a folding business card. So what I have is four sides. And on the four sides, I have enough room to put everything, at least for now. Maybe next time around, it'll have to be accordion shape. I don't know.
Wow.
And I have those, and I'll stand out in the aisle, and I'll just hand them out to people. And sort of like the Barker in Las Vegas, bringing people in, you know.
So that gives you opportunity to have conversations with some of these people, and do you run across people who are already familiar with your work?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. Now, interestingly, for Christmas, I received this little toy that run by a battery, and it has a string in it. And when you turn it on, the string starts accelerating. This is a long loop of string. And as it accelerates, just like the space launch loop, it rises up into the air, and it forms a loop, and it maintains this verticality completely against gravity, exactly the way the space launch loop does. So I will have that, maybe two or three of them there that people can play with and get them interested in a slingshot.
Oh, cool. Now, do you manage to collect information from people? Like, do you get email addresses or anything like that so that you know how to get back to these people?
I do. Every time someone buys a book, I tell them I'm going to beat them up if they don't put their name and email address on my list.
Okay.
Not really, but I ask them to, and most people do. And even for someone that doesn't buy, I invite them to put their name and email on my list anyway, and you guys get a copy of the emails that I send out from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah, it's like a mini newsletter that's kind of marketing announcements. Hey, this is what's going on with my new book or things like that. And that's the best kind of marketing you can do is when you find somebody who's interested in your work, get back to that person. Not too much, not over much, but just enough to keep that person interested and keep that information flowing. So, yeah, not only is our events a great way to meet people and put yourself and your work out there, but to collect data, too.
Now, one of the interesting things about the panels that I try to participate in, for instance, in the forthcoming, in the Cosine Con, there's going to be a panel on faster than light travel. Now, I know about as much about faster than light travel as anybody out there because I've followed the research work that's been going on. I've included that in my books. And then Alistair Mayer, a friend of mine who's called in a couple of times. I don't know if
he's been
on
our
show,
guest a few times. Yes.
Yeah. I thought so. He also writes hard science fiction. And so between the two of us, we tend to attend these events together. So we're always on the panels and can kind of reinforce each other and keep the interest alive.
Yeah. Now, you want to have some fun with that one. Show up late for it and grumbling about your Lumen drive isn't working correctly or something.
All right. We are talking to author Robert G. Willis-Croft. And Robert, how can people find you out there in the internet world? They want to reach out to you, say hi, or ask you questions. How can they contact you?
My last name is Willis-Croft, Willis-Croft. If you just Google Willis-Croft, you'll get thousands of hits. You Google Robert Willis-Croft, it'll bring you in a little bit closer, but that's the quickest way to do it. My book website is robertwilliscroft.com, so you can do that, and that'll take you right to my newly overhauled book website. And from there, there are links that will take you to my personal website if you want to find out more about this scoundrel.
Okay. Twitter?
Beam, I'm having trouble understanding anything now. The audio has gone weird.
Where?
I can hear you guys.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm
hear
on
you.
Twitter. I'm on Facebook.
All right.
Okay.
Just pop back in.
So
go ahead, Robert.
You can reach me by just typing in my name. Or at R. Willis-Croft or R. G. Willis-Croft sometimes, but you'll find me.
All right.
And I'm in too many places not to find me.
Yeah.
And as always, not only can you find all of our guests on Voice of Indy by sending us a note at freshinkgroup.com using our contact form, we'll make sure we pass that along. But in this case, Robert G. Willis-Croft is one of our authors as well, so we try to keep track of where he is.
Yeah.
And a little bit of what he's up to as well. So, great. It's been good having you on again, Robert. Congratulations on all the success this past year. And we're looking forward to several new exciting books from you this year, including hopefully sometime later this month, the Keed, A Lost Civilization. So, thanks again, everybody. Thanks for calling in and participating. And what do we got going on in the future here, Beam?
Well, next week we have Stephen Skibicki. He will be in the guest seat.
All right. And then after that, we've got a police officer in Texas named Chris Langlois, or Langlois. And he's got a book about his grandfather who became a rather famous medic in World War II. So we're looking forward to having Chris Langlois, or Langlois, however you pronounce that. And who we got after that, Beam?
After that, we have a member of the Christian rock band The Word 66. I believe it is Scott Stevens is his name. He is the singer guitar player, and they've got some really good music. We just kind of got turned on to them here recently. They reached out to us and shared some of their music, and so we got them on the show. And after that.
Yeah, you want to be popular, host a podcast, and everybody wants to be your buddy. So after that. We're going to go ahead and do our end-of-year show again. This will be at the end of January, so it'll be a 13-month year-end recap, but we're looking forward to having some fun with that. We hope everybody comes back and tries again after that frustrating week last time. But again, Robert G. Williscroft has been our guest. Thanks for being on the show, Robert.
Thanks, Robert.
You're very welcome. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
All right. All right. We'll have a couple of commercials for everybody on the way out. These first two are going to be by books by your co-hosts. Every now and then we actually run a commercial for one of our own books and then one for Village Boss, which is a new release from Fresh Ink Group. And we'll see everybody next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Frank relishes fast success in early retirement, but struggling to preserve his life's work thrusts him into a desperate battle to protect the people he cares about most. Beverly seeks a new beginning in Tarpon Springs until those she trusts steal control of her destiny, forcing a fight for her very survival. All 12-year-old Kevin wants is attention from the only man he respects. Yet murder and the wrenching indifference of a callous legal system toward one vulnerable child proves even friendship might never be enough. Riven by tragedy, consumed by grief, all three must confront the wondrous possibility that our indelible bonds may somehow transcend even death, that a cherished soul truly can find the way back. Only together might this improbable family dare embrace their own brand of unexpected love, that infinite potential to achieve more than any one person can alone. Through it all, they are teased by the mystery of those dancing lights, a million pinpoints in every imaginable color swirling to form brilliant images of extraordinary lives. Dance of the Lights by Stephen Gies is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group.
If you ever find yourself on a strange highway, don't turn around. Don't panic. Just keep going. You never know what you'll find. Could be an autistic young man conjuring magic with his fingers. Or one girl's afternoon leading to a lifetime of loss. Demon or angel. A winged man revealing his true nature. A mother's recognition bringing closure to her daughter. Sudden death of a teen boy stifling burgeoning secrets. Black man's guitar transforming one young boy. Decades-old accident bringing a desperate confession. Supernatural first love healing a broken family. Head on down the strange highway and see more stories unfold. Need a ride? This book will get you there. Catch an e-book or get on the bus with a nice print edition you can hold and keep, perhaps a full-sized trade paperback, or ride in style with your own dust-jacketed hardcover. Fresh Ink Group's got you covered. You can exit the strange highway and come back anytime you want. You see, now you know the way in. Don't be a stranger. If you ever find yourself on a strange highway,
Dexter Jones is a military veteran suffering from PTSD. He has flashbacks he can't quite explain. There are gaps in his memory. Is it the result of his head trauma? Or is it the CIA running a program on him? Now a hired gun tasked to eliminate drug traffickers, Dex finds himself in Colombia wearing military fatigues and fully armed, but answering by name he's never heard. He sets off for an intercontinental mission to uncover the truth, even as assassinations and betrayal at the highest levels of government threaten to destabilize the world. Maybe it's not who Dex is so much as who he might still become. Now in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats, Village Boss by Ronan Duvall is proudly published by Fresh Ink.
You're listening to The Voice of Indy.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.